one of the most pressing issues probably is the domination of the food supply and the contribution of those that many call the industrial food system that is corporate run and controlled, and their contribution to climate change and numerous other environmental crises, as well as human rights abuses. And to talk about this today, as well as other things, and the importance of the growing focus around this country, and certainly here in New Mexico, on buying local, with the ever-increasing number of growers' markets, or whether you're growing your own food, whether it's a pot of radishes or a raised bed in your yard, or a half acre or many acres, are my guests, Beth Crowder and Isaura Andaluz. So I welcome you. Thank you for being here. And I asked actually Isaura and Beth to send me some information on themselves. And they're both very compact and brief, these two women. And Isaura wrote, "Without bees, you have no seeds. Without seeds, you have no food. It's that simple," is what she wrote. And it is very, very true. We're going to talk about that. But we also know, and we'll talk about why it's not really that simple, given that our bees and seeds are extraordinarily in a vulnerable place at this time. And Beth Crowder has been saving seeds for much of her life. And I'm going to turn it over to you just for a couple of moments to talk a little bit about yourself and tell us about yourself. And when did you start saving seeds and why? How long have you been doing that, Beth? Because I heard you're one of the premier seed savers around here.
I think there's many, many seed savers all over the place, Carol. I've been gardening since I can remember, even with a little marigold patch when I was a little girl. But
was that significant to you, the marigold patch?
Yeah, yeah. Because it was right outside my fort. So it was a place where I spent a lot of time.
And you got the seeds?
I don't remember doing that. I was probably about 8 or 9. So I probably, you know, they're so irresistible when they're dried. And so I probably inadvertently spread the seeds around. But I didn't know that I was doing that, I guess. And then, you know, I gardened. My dad gardened. And so I followed him around in the garden. And
where'd you grow up?
I was born in New York, and then I moved here when I was 10 with my family, so I've been in New Mexico most of my life. And anyway, so I gardened, and then when I was, around the early 80s, I found a bunch of those nice little organic gardening magazines, those little small ones that they used to have. Mm-hmm. I found a whole pile of them at the flea market up there on Central, and I bought them, and I started reading them, and there, Nancy Bubel was one of the writers of organic gardening way back then, and there was an article on how to save tomato seeds, and I thought, well, how exciting could that be? So that was the first time I tried doing that, and I still grow those same seeds from 1984. It was the year my first son was born, so I am kind of sentimental about that year, and so every year I grow those same tomato seeds.
So what did you find exciting about the idea of saving your tomato seeds?
Well, I guess it's just another homesteading skill and another life skill, I guess that's what I found about that.
Did you have a larger picture of what it meant to save seeds at that point?
At that time, I don't think I did. But one thing I started also that year was I started a seed swap. I thought, well, if I'm going to save seeds, and you know, I met my other neighbors. I lived in the South Valley at that time. And a lot of my older neighbors would share plants like people do when they have gardens, and they always have too many blackberry plants coming up in the sidewalk or whatever. And so I thought, well, why don't we just get together and have a celebration of spring and a party, but also have the emphasis on trading seeds and plants. And so in 1984, that was our first seed swap, and I still continue that tradition now. And I think as we traded seeds, and then as our older friends passed away, we realized that we were saving something really special in an sentimental way, but also in a practical way. I still have my old friend Bernard McCleskey's elephant garlic in my garden, and his blackberries, and his and Charlie Diebold. Charlie was a farmer in Peralta for many, many years. He was a pioneer for the native seed and native wildflower production that goes on the highways. I can't drive around New Mexico without thinking about Charlie and his seed farm. Yeah. So I think maybe as we connected with other people, we began to realize how important it is and how fun it is. I mean, it's like canning tomatoes or, you know, putting up peas in the freezer is saving seed and having that for the next year or whatever. But
so you live out south of Albuquerque now.
I live in Sabinal, which is a small community south of Belen.
And you have a little farm?
Mm-hmm.
What is it called? Sparrow?
Sparrow Hawk Farm.
And what do you do at Sparrow Hawk?
Well, it's gone through many changes, as life does. I've always had gardens and then bees, of course. We've had there since we've been there, and then have raised animals. I have lots of chickens. That's one of my favorite animals. So we've had goats and sheep and cows and horses and a little bit of everything. But right now I just have honeybees and chickens and gardens.
Yeah, your husband's a beekeeper, isn't he?
Yes, he also is, yeah.
Yeah.
He lives up in northern New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for sharing that with us. And Isadora, I want to just know a little bit. I know, actually, Beth does a lot, and there's probably more that she hasn't told us. But Isadora, I know that you, too, are a beekeeper because you were on this program when we had the beekeeping women, some of the beekeeping women of Albuquerque here. And I know you make damn good apricot preserves.
Thank you.
I was kind of hoping there'd be a little bottle that accompanied you, but no, I know it's best. And did I read that you're a native cuisine chef or something along those lines?
Well, my parents are both chefs, and I guess I consider myself a chef too. But that was one of the main interests with seeds, is that I love to eat, and I'm really interested in historical plants and crops that people don't eat anymore, people call forgotten crops. And so that, I think that's where I've, you know, loved to try to take some of these old crops and try to find a way that people will now eat them.
Talk about that. I never heard it put that way historically. Is that like heirloom?
Maybe even more than heirloom. I mean, I think they're just, for example, quince. Let's take quince. I thought I should have brought one to show you. I mean, a lot of people don't know what quince is. Right. And it's a fruit. It looks kind of like an apple, but it's big. It's, you know, and it's light yellow colored. Green, real green. It turns to light yellow. Has a little fuzzy surface. And it's very tart. It doesn't taste very good when you eat it just like that. But, you know, my parents are from Mexico. And so there, you know, they use it a lot when they cook it. Down, like we, you know, bake in the oven, or we make a paste out of it, like a fruit paste out of it. And so that's one of the things that, you know, I've been making that for several years now here, and everyone else is like, oh gosh, you know, make some more of that this year. And I just finally found some the other day. A woman has three trees, and I told her, I said, I'll buy it all. And so that's, you know, one of the crops that if I give it to other people, they're like, oh gosh, you know, I want to put in a quince bush, and I want to put in a quince bush, and that's a way of getting this fruit to come back into our mainstream.
So you bought quinces? Is that the plural of it, or is the plural
quinces? I don't know. Yeah, I see. I only have one bush in my front yard, but I only have like six on there this year because all the blossoms got blown off.
So are you saying that you pass on seeds to other people?
I do pass some of the seeds, but also just the desire for people to go out and plant this in their gardens or their farms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what else is considered a historical food?
Another one here, I would say, like galitas. It's like a wild spinach. And that one has been difficult. I mean, I finally see it at the farmers markets, because we work a lot with the farmers markets trying to see if we can find crops that will do well here that they can introduce. And that is something that it's just like a wild spinach. And, you know, people used to just, you know, cook it down with a little bit of onion. Sometimes people put bacon into it and just, you know, brown that a little bit. And then you add in the spinach, the wild galitas at the end. You can eat it raw in a salad.
You know, in all my years here, I had never heard of colitis, and it's just within the last year and a half, and I have some people say, my yard is just covered with it. It's just growing wild, and it's like, I am so incredibly jealous. I love it a lot, and it's also called lamb's quarters, which...
And there's one that's really beautiful. It has in the center, it has this magenta piece in the middle. Just really beautiful. So it's not only tasty, but it's beautiful as well. And that has tons of seeds. I mean, you can have a little garden and it can become a weed, you know, if you're not careful with it. But the great thing about it is that it comes up early in the spring. And also, mine's starting to reseed again. And so it's coming up again. And it'll winter over, even with the snow and stuff. And go out there, knock off the snow, and I can eat little fresh lamb's quarters.
So how did you get involved with seed keeping?
Seed keeping, seed saving, seed bank.
I like that.
Yeah, I like seed keeping.
My grandmother's. I remember that they would every time we would go to Mexico, they would give my mother a little cone. It's you know, like in Latin America, you'd go to the markets and you would buy your groceries, fruits, vegetables, and they'd take a sheet of newspaper and they roll it up like a cone and stuff everything in there and fold the edge over. And so we would come home with those little packets, these little cones of seeds. And it's funny because even 10 years ago, I went to Mexico City and one of my uncles, he had gone to a doctor's visit somewhere and he had seen some little flower that he really liked and it had seeds on it. So he had picked up all these seeds. And so here he hands me this little pack of seeds. Of course, this time it was in a little Kleenex, you know, but it's like, you know, it's just, I think, innate that people would just, you know, find something that they liked and they would, you know, share it with someone else. And again, like Beth was saying, I think a lot of these plants too also have sentimental value of, you know, who they came from and where they came from.
And of course, at this time, seed saving, seed keeping has become much more than this, I don't know what the word is, bucolic kind of nice thing to do. It's actually become a very important thing. I don't know if you'd say seeds. I just made this up in my head now. Seed saving is a political act. I don't know. Do you think that's true, Isada?
Oh, I definitely. I think definitely it is. Yes.
Why at this time is there so much concern about that and an important thing to do? And now we're going to start getting into some more nitty-gritty things. And
well, I would say that what has happened is, especially now in New Mexico, is with the genetic engineering seeds. And we've had genetically engineered alfalfa here in New Mexico, which I think maybe Beth can talk a little bit more about what happened with her about this. It was planted here from 2005 to 2007.
And the genetically engineered?
Alfalfa. And then it was removed from the market because there wasn't sufficient environmental analysis done on it. And then the Obama administration re-released it again in January of this year. And so these seeds are patented. And so that means that, for example, you know, if I have alfalfa seeds, which I have alfalfa growing in my garden right now, from where my house has only been there for 50 years, and it used to be an alfalfa field. So there's still alfalfa that still comes up in my backyard. So if I was to take my alfalfa seeds and, you know, I could, you know, give them to Beth, you know, say, here's some 50-year alfalfa plants, right? But now with the genetic engineered alfalfa, you know, if someone has a field of it next to me, the bees can carry the pollen from those flowers and contaminate mine, and then I can no longer legally save my seeds
because it's patented.
Because it's patented, so I no longer own my own seeds.
So this is what I was sort of making reference to, part of it in my introduction, in terms of the industrial food system and their control and that whole thing about you have control of seeds, you control our food.
Yes.
So the fields that you were referring to of alfalfa, of genetically engineered alfalfa back a few years ago, is that, are you talking about people who own land who purchased genetically engineered seeds, or are you talking about a huge commercial endeavor where, what am I trying to say, that these fields belong to like big time
companies or something?
Companies,
like that?
Yeah.
You know, that's a really interesting question, because when we started doing research on the genetically engineered seeds, we kept seeing Wells Fargo coming up. I thought, Wells Fargo. And they would say farm management companies. And so I don't know if we have any of that here in New Mexico, but I know that that's what happened in California, was a lot of the farmers, you know, we had a lot of farmers in California way back, I don't know, 60s, 70s, I'm not sure when. And what happened was a lot of them had loans with Wells Fargo. And so when they lost, when they had a bad year and they ended up losing their property, Wells Fargo took over the property. And so now you have these corporations now that own a bunch of farmland that's farmed for different purposes. And I'm not sure how all of that works, but I just found that it was very interesting how you know, this can take place. But here in New Mexico, I'm not sure where all this genealogy of alfalfa was planted, whether it was private or whether it was land that's owned by NMSU or who. But it was planted like in about 8 counties. And so the problem is that when you buy a genetically engineered seed, you do enter into a contract, and normally you have to sign. You sign something. It's called technology stewardship agreement. In fact, if people want to, they can go online and type in Monsanto technology stewardship agreement. And you can pull down a copy of this agreement. And in this agreement, it says that you cannot, you know, save the seed, save the plant, or whatever. But the other thing is that you also can't tell your neighbor what you're planting. So if I plant genetically engineered alfalfa,
wait a minute. You, according to the contract that you signed, you cannot tell. Beth, you're shaking your head. Yes, yeah.
I believe that's what I've heard. Yes,
that you cannot.
I have not seen that technology agreement, but I'm going to look at it.
Yeah, that is really scary.
Well, in the agreement, it doesn't say no. You can't say, but that's what it is. Because we've asked, like, you know, how do we know? Because, for example, if I'm going to plant, you know, blue corn, and, you know, Beth's going to plant white corn, and I want to save my corn for seed, I'll ask her, you know, Beth, what are you planting this year? Or anything, you know, tomatoes or something that might cross. Mm-hmm. We'll ask each other, you know, if we live next door to each other. But now that whole true, what I call the true farmer-to-farmer relationship, that's disappearing as a result of this.
The trust.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, I have a question, if that's okay, for Isaura.
Of course.
So in this contract to buy genetically engineered seeds, does it not say that there's some level of communication that is prohibited when you sign that?
It doesn't say that in there, but then they also have, separate from this contract, a planting guide. But I know, I mean, from having spoken with Monsanto representatives, that no, we cannot know where these were planted. And some states I had like a toll-free number that supposedly you could call and you could find out, you know, supposedly with this alfalfa, that was the situation, that you could call and they'd say, you know, you'd give your address or whatever, and they'd say, oh, within 3 miles there's GE alfalfa, or within 5 miles or whatever. But we tried calling those numbers and no one was ever able to get anyone to respond.
Feel free, Beth. Or Isaura, if you want to ask questions of each other, that's definitely fine.
Well, Beth had an incident years ago with alfalfa.
I'm not sure if that's what it was, though. I have no proof of. 1 year I lost about 3/4 of my hives. And it looked to me like an insecticidal kill. But Isaura, upon, you know, you were doing your research on the genetically engineered alfalfa at that point. And when we talked about that, she had mentioned that she thought it could be that, but I've never. And how would you know? That's part of the problem with the genetically engineered crops, is when your crop is contaminated from a GE crop, you don't know where it came from. There's that's what's frightening about it, is that you don't know how you got that. It's like getting a disease or something.
If you just joined us, this is Women's Focus, and my name is Carol Voss, and my guests in the studio are Beth Crowder and Isaura Andaluz, and we're talking about seed saving and, you know, if you want to call it seed keeping, and we're also going to be talking, we haven't touched on this yet, but the whole notion of justice. Isaura went to a conference a couple of weeks ago, which really interests me, and we're going to get into that, because it was called Justice Begins with Seeds, which is a really, in my mind, a very powerful statement. It's very, very powerful. So NMSU, which you mentioned, Isaura, is I don't know if they're doing it yet, but they're going to be working on genetically engineered chilies.
They are currently working on that, yes. And they told us last year we had to present before the Economic and Rural Development Committee. It's an interim committee of the state legislature down in Las Cruces last year in September. And they said that they would that this genetic engineered chili would be ready in about a year or two. And NMSU is working, it's the ag school here in the state, and so they're working on a lot of genetically engineered crops. What we understood is a lot of the forage crops. And the chili is not a forage crop, but they're doing that because the New Mexico Chili Association lobbied the state legislature for money for this. So now we have a genetically engineered chili that's going to be patented, that's being developed with our tax money, for which we could possibly get sued for if we become contaminated.
That's the I know you work hard on these issues. Are you part of Save New Mexico Seeds?
Yes, we're part of the Save New Mexico Seeds Coalition, correct.
Are there legal people working on this? Because, you know, it all blows my mind. I'm genetically modified engineer, you know, that it's really unbelievable to me. But the whole notion that you are this innocent person trying to grow, and because of contamination from someone else's crops, that you could actually be sued. I mean, that is actually, I don't believe it.
It has happened. Yes.
Right. And a lot of, and there's a lot of small growers who have to spend a whole lot of money for legal help.
And one of the pieces, the social pieces of that story, you know, the one is the economical and then the other is the environmental, but then the social piece is that farmers who are in communities where they previously trusted their neighbors to, like you were saying, share the information about what you were growing and help each other and collaborate or at least be neighbors, find themselves in these very awkward predicaments where they can't trust their neighbors because the neighbors are either they have signed contracts with the genetically engineered companies and they're maybe embarrassed to admit that now they're growing this because they know the consequences of their neighbor who might become contaminated. And I find that really sad.
In terms of this contract business, if an individual, like if you, Isara, or Beth, or myself, wanted to get genetically, let's say we wanted to get genetically engineered seed, can we do that?
Yes, we would have to,
as individuals, sign a contract.
Yes, you just go to the seed supplier place that provides this type of seed.
Uh-huh.
And yes. And then the seed, it does dictate, like, you know, you have to, you know, but you also have to use their chemicals as well. So that's another way how they lock in the farmers by having, you buy the seed from them, they have to buy all the amendments that you add to, you know, the Roundup. Most of the seeds are Roundup resistant. And that's the main ones.
You know, I can't think of the name of the movie, which actually KUNM screened at the National Hispanic Cultural Center a while back. It was a benefit.
Was it Food Inc.?
Yes, it was Food Inc. Very frightening stories about Monsanto and what they do in the dark of the night, literally arriving at farmers' doors, and it sounds Orwellian. It sounds, you know, just otherworldly. But those are the kind of things that are truly happening.
No, I spoke to Mo Parr, and see, he wasn't even a farmer. This is the other thing is that Mo was a seed cleaner. He cleaned seeds for the farmers in Missouri, and you know, he was already in his 70s. And what happened was they basically followed him for 2 years. And like you were saying, he would get up in the middle of the night before dawn. Like he said, he told me like 2 o'clock in the morning to go clean the seeds for his clients so he could be back home before the Monsanto people started coming along to follow him all day long.
And explain, I'm glad you've had this personal experience of knowing him and knowing about it. Explain why the Monsanto people were coming.
Well, they said that the reason that they filed a lawsuit against him was because they said that he was inducing people to save seeds.
major crime, inducing people to save. Yeah, and this is all true. This is what's happening.
And so he ended up settling out of court. Because that's what a lot of people do. They can't. I mean, who can fight? Who can fight these people in court? And he said the attorney basically said, "Look, you know, it's going to cost you this much here. You know, at the local level, the state level, the national level, and you know, he just couldn't do it. And so he said they showed up to his doorstep with a stack of papers like this, and then you know wanted him and his wife to sign off and." On all of these documents. And unfortunately, by the time the Center for Food Safety found out about this case, he already had settled out of court. But basically, they probably could have probably won in court. Because, you know, he was just operating his own business, you know, and he would have people sign. Because he said, you know, if you're doing genetic engineering your seeds, you know, you have to sign a waiver saying that the seeds you're giving me are not patented seeds. You know, but how could he know unless he tested every single batch?
Right. So, Beth, I want to ask you, if you just joined us, this is Women's Focus, Isaura Andaluz, we just heard from, and also with us is Beth Crowder. So, Beth, in your area of life where you collect seeds and you have seed swaps and you meet other people who are doing similar things, has these issues at all encroached on what you do on a very local, very kind of daily or seasonal level?
Oh, I think most of the people who join our seed swap and come by are highly aware because it's been in the news. And like you say, there's been movies made about these issues. And I guess in my own rebellious way, what I like to focus on is just that very little pile of seeds in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I get bogged down in the frightening big picture, which is very frightening, and I have seen some of the movies, and I have met some of these farmers, and it's very saddening, and it can be just so discouraging that you would stop doing what's so natural and what's so important, at least on an individual basis. So, so I always carry seeds in my pocket. Yeah, and seed saving is very easy if anyone has a garden. And this is the seed saving time of the year, or one of them. All you have to do is go out in your garden and look at those dry pods and pick them off and put them in paper bags. And I like to label mine because I like to know what I'm growing from year to year. And I would say, a friend of mine just asked me a couple of days ago, she said, last year I saved all of my pole bean seeds and then I planted them this spring and nothing came up. And there is the Terminator gene technology in place, like for,
no.
Or, okay.
No.
Because I didn't know, that has not happened to me, except with quelites, with the lamb's quarters. I saved a lot of seed one year from my garden, and I never got any of it to come up because it's a wild plant, you know, and I think it makes up its mind where and when it wants to come up. I've never actually been able to save it and directly, like, cultivate it. I'm always happy when it comes up and by itself, and when it does, I leave it alone because I realize that's where it wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so seed saving, collect the dry pods, put them in paper bags, put them in a relatively cool place, and then plant them again next year. A lot of seeds go through what they call an after-ripening hardening of the seeds. So say if I pick bean seeds this week out of my garden, even though it's fall, I could, you know, if it was not cold yet, I could put them in the garden and often they wouldn't come up because they haven't gone through their over-ripening process. So it's best to, when you collect the seeds, I usually save them for the following year. But there's a great book I wanted to mention. It's called Seed to Seed. Is it Suzanne? Ashworth, I believe.
Yeah.
A wonderful, wonderful, very basic, but also it gives the botanical names and the relationships of all the different families of seeds so that if you want to grow a lot of members of one family, it will explain if that family has members that cross-pollinate or whatever. So it's real, really clear and really basic, and seed saving those. It's just so much fun, and it's so much fun to just go to those jars in the spring and decide what you're going to plant.
You know, beautiful.
You came and gave me a little packet of beans today. How old did you say?
Oh, those beans?
Yeah.
Oh, I just cleaned them.
Oh, you just
actually, they were from 2010, and I had them in a big feed sack all year because I didn't get around to it. And so I recently took that sack of seed to school with me, and I thought the kindergarten and first graders would like to know what threshing seeds was about. And so we threshed those seeds just last week, but they were grown in 2010.
And what does thrash mean?
Thrash? Oh, that's when you break up the seed pods and release the dry seeds, yeah. Okay. Or thresh. Threshing. Thresh. Did I say thrash? Threshing. Threshing.
First threshing
and thrash. So I'm looking at the time, and I can't believe how fast this hour is going, and I wanted us to talk some. Isaura, I mentioned that to our listeners that you attended a conference a couple of weeks ago, Justice Begins with Seeds, that was in San Francisco, put on by the California Biosafety Alliance. And it sounds like a real grassroots organization struggling against the corporate control of seeds. Tell us a little bit about that whole concept of Justice Begins with Seeds and some of what was happening at that conference.
One of the biggest focus was on Mexico. There were a lot of people that were from Mexico that were there at this conference. And there's an organization called Sin Maíz, No Hay País. Without corn, there is no country. Because in Mexico, they've had a moratorium on corn, on genetically engineered corn. And Mexico is that's where all the corn comes from. They have over 200 varieties of native corn. And this, what's happening now, it's like what's happening all around the world, is that all of the private funding public funding for seed research and all of that has all gone away. So now there's only one research facility left in Mexico, and two of the scientists came or researchers came and spoke, and one guy had actually just released from work for about a week. Because he spoke out, and so he was, you know, he was banned from work, for a week, you know, for having spoken out about this. But he said, you know, what they have been doing is they've been working with all the local farmers, because they kind of like what we do with, you know, oh, I like these seeds, right? So these farmers, I mean, it's cultural. They walk through fields, people's fields, and like, oh, this corn looks really nice. I'll take this one. Oh, this one looks, you know, whatever. And they just pick corn from different neighbors, and then they get to go home and incorporate it into their seeds. And so how do you break a culture? You know, by telling people, no, you know, you can't do this anymore. You can't go to people's fields and take, corn that you would normally do because it may be genetically engineered because they're doing some test plots now. So they're very, very concerned because if this GE corn gets planted in Mexico, that will be the end of corn. And so that was the whole thing was, you know, seeds begin with justice because now people will no longer be able to grow their own food, which is, I think, the thing that I love the most about seeds is being able to grow our own food, have control over what we eat. And again, the seeds are so beautiful and, you know, the plants are so beautiful and the bees and everything. It's just, you know, that's what's so wonderful about it all.
I have another question for Isaura. Is that a university-sponsored research lab in Mexico?
No, it's INEFA. That's the only one public that there exists. And then the Sin Maíz No Hay País is a private group of people, kind of like our Safe Mexico Seeds Coalition, that are fighting against this, to protect the corn.
So really, it is all about domination and taking away any control that we have, wanting to take control, and it's starting to happen about what we plant and if we can plant and how we plant.
Well, I mean, it's about money. I mean, which is like, you know, I have no problem with making money. You know, I know businesses have, you know, there's nothing bad with having commerce, but I think it's the extreme. Like I said, domination that has happened, where, like, for example, in Mexico, and I think this might could happen to us here in New Mexico, is that in 2007 they passed a law where you can no longer sell or trade seeds unless the seeds are certified or if you're a registered farmer with the government. So basically, it eliminates seed swaps. Because we would not be able, Beth and I would not be able to swap seeds if my seed wasn't certified or if I wasn't registered with, you know, Department of Agriculture or something like that.
Did you say they passed the law or they're trying?
No, they passed it in 2007. And right now, what's happening is it at the Supreme Court level? But the people from Mexico were telling me that you know, it's probably going to just stay there because again, the governments, you know, everyone's paid off by all these companies.
Wait a minute. I'm getting clear something up because I think I just misheard something. You're talking about Mexico now? Okay, for a minute, when you started talking, I thought you were talking about our state.
No, I said it could happen in New
Mexico.
It could happen in New Mexico.
Yes, yes.
Because, for example, this year, the New Mexico Chili Association, they try to pass a lot of different things. I mean, they really fought us on, we were trying to pass a law for 3 years now to protect farmers if they get contaminated, right? So they passed a law called the New Mexico Chili Advertising Act. And basically it's to say, you know, if the chili's not from New Mexico, they can't call it that. But the rules haven't been devised yet. And so everyone's saying, well, what if they're going to tell us that in order to call our chili New Mexican chili, it has to be certified, you know? So what about all of us that save our chilies and sell it and, you know, especially all the people at the farmers markets? So, I mean, because you see that everything's done in other countries gets done around the world.
I wonder how many of our listeners today know about the genetically engineered chili in this state, because this is our sacred food here. And if all of our listeners would get in touch with their representatives and have a little chat about that.
Yes, because, I mean,
just to raise awareness. Even.
And I just want to say that everyone that called in this year, that went up to state legislature, that called the representatives, it really made a difference because we made it all the way to the House floor with this bill this year. And representatives were calling people, and like you Beth had people call her back. And so it makes a huge difference.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Beth, because one of the things I wanted to say before you two left is if people want to find out more about what's going on in our state, and so the green chili is excellent. Where's a good place to go online to find out information so people can have that understanding and then hopefully write emails or make phone calls?
Yes, if you go to savennseeds.org and sign and get on our listserv, because we send out articles on different things that are going on and all the state legislative events. And also at the end of this month, on October 29th, Saturday, from 4 to about 5:30, we're going to be bringing Vandana Shiva, Percy Schmeiser, and Dan Revacher. Dan Revacher is with PubPat. He filed a lawsuit for Oscada versus Monsanto, where it's a lawsuit to try to overturn the patent on seeds.
Right, and I wanted to mention that. Let's do that right now and say more about it. There's going to be a conversation. Save New Mexico Seeds, UNM Fair Trade Initiative is presenting a panel or a talk called Impacts of Genetically Engineered Crops on the Freedom to Farm in the U.S. Abroad. How far will it go? It's October 29th, 4 o'clock at Woodward Hall, which is on the UNM campus. And there's going to be also availability space in Student Union Building in the ballrooms if it overflows at Woodward Hall. So you can go to, you can go to UNM and find a map. You can find a map, and they'll let you know how to get there. Is this free? And if it's ticket prices, we can't mention prices. Is it?
No, it's free. I mean, you know, if people want to donate money to help us pay for the buttons and things like that.
Right, but it's essentially free.
It's a free event.
And those of you, Vandana Shiva, we've certainly heard on this station on alternative radio on Saturday evenings. She's a physicist and environmentalist, and she pioneered. This is very substantial that she's going to be here. She pioneered the organic movement in India and established there the country's biggest network of seed keepers and organic producers. And if you want to check up on her, very exciting that she's going to be here in Albuquerque. www.vandanashiva.org, VandanaShiva.org. And you were mentioning chilies, and you sent me something. Isora, now I'm going to talk fast because we're running out of time. In different ways, I guess the chili is in peril here. This is our crop here. Our and Beth is clutching, you know, like or beating against her heart because many New Mexicans, I'm going to read from what you sent me, think if they buy their chili in New Mexico, it's from New Mexico. And they think if they buy from New Mexico companies, their chili is automatically guaranteed to be from New Mexico. They think if they eat at their favorite New Mexican restaurants, the chili they eat is grown in New Mexico. Of course, isn't that what we're going to think? But it's not necessarily true. There are many companies and restaurants who are buying Mexican chili or chili from other countries, and it's got to do with cheaper labor, et cetera, et cetera. So that's sort of a different issue, isn't it, than what we were just talking about. But it's still, it's just indicative of a larger picture.
No, and I think that the chili industry says, you know, it's fine. If you produce a lot of salsa, we probably can't produce enough chili in the state to do a lot of the salsas. But you know, that's what you're reading there is the Mexico Chili Association's verbiage. But you know, they buy all those companies, Bono Foods, Cervantes, all these people buy from Mexico and Peru and other countries, which is fine. But if you're going to make a genetically engineered chili, then that chili, if it's patented, it's going to cross contaminate our chili seeds. So they can't. If they're going to build it, then make it. Then they need to make it sterile. Like you can build in, like you can put in like male sterility or something like that, so it doesn't cross contaminate us.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting stuff. Okay, we are running out of time. The event's coming up. It's an important event. Congratulations for putting this together. And it's happening October 29th, which is 2 weeks from, no, 3 weeks from today at Woodward Hall at UNM. Any last things that you want to share, Beth?
No.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Isara, last words?
Well, I always tell people to plant. They just plant something. Yes.
Just to plant something, yes. So, I did this fall. I went a whole season without plant, summer season, and I got all freaked out when I saw my car window was, did you have frost on mm-hmm. your window? Mm-hmm. And I ran out to the back because my things are coming up, the few things that I planted, and I thought, please be okay. Please be okay. Any tips? I'm going to say this for people who are doing, if you don't have the official covers to put it in the ground, what can you do?
It's never too late to plant. That's what I say.
But what happens if it may get
thrift to store, you go to get some old sheets, old blankets. You can just cover. And there's a lot of crops that love cold. Spinach loves cold.
Does beets love cold?
Mm-hmm. The beet
greens
love.
So I don't have to, because that's taking up the most room. I don't need to worry about covering it.
Yeah, if they're really little, you might want to. But in general, they're cold hardy plants. Yeah.
What about arugula?
Mm-hmm. Loves a cold.
Oh, thank you for telling me that. Yeah. Then I'm going to not worry so much.
No,
because a friend told me pillowcases and sheets. But then if I did that last night, it would have been soaked by the rain.
Mm, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I'm now much relieved.
Thank you.
So this is Women's Focus right here at KUNM.